Okay, so we're going to continue on with the Prabhupada Living Bhagavatam seminar. Last night we left off. We're in a section about different cooks, people that cook for Srila Prabhupada, and also people that couldn't cook for Prabhupada, which was me. I mentioned a few incidences where I attempted to use Prabhupada's three-tier cooker and failed miserably, but fortunately there were other people there that could fill in. From Hawaii, where Sukadev cooked for the whole month, Prabhupada was happy with that. We went to mainland America on June 1st, and during Prabhupada's 10-day stay there in Los Angeles, he was receiving the cooking of Jamuna Dasi and Palika Dasi. They were very expert. They had both been trained in India. Of course, Jamuna went on to produce her famous cooking book, about 1,000 pages, which won many awards. And so there was no problem there with cooking. When it came to leave Los Angeles, I approached Rameshwara Swami and I suggested to him that Jamuna should be persuaded to travel with Prabhupada whilst he was in America so that, you know, Prabhupada would get first class prasadam wherever he went. She wasn't available, but Palika was. So Palika joined the party and she became Prabhupada's regular cook for about 2 months, June and July. So that kind of let me off the hook, but still I got some opportunities to cook for Prabhupada. So from LA we went to Detroit. So on June 14th 1976, Srila Prabhupada had a visit from Ambarish Prabhu and Shruta Kirti. They were combining together on Prabhupada's suggestion. Ambarish wanted to start a restaurant in Boston. And Shruta Kirti, of course, he was an expert cook, so Prabhupada advised them to work with him to do that. So they came to see Srila Prabhupada. They had a discussion about the restaurant and the different standards that Prabhupada wanted. Then about 11:30, I walked into the room. It was time for Srila Prabhupada's massage. So as I stood in my gamcha, ready for Srila Prabhupada's massage, Shruti Kirti told him that I looked as though I could give a very good massage. Those days I was a little bit strongly built. To my embarrassment and everybody else's amusement, Prabhupada replied with good-humoured sarcasm, Harry Sori's defect is he cannot cook. Otherwise he is your duplicate, except cooking. He knows very good cooking. Pushta Krishna chimed in that, well, he knows how to eat. But then Prabhupada switched his mood. A young man must eat, he said. Why should he be like me? So, except cooking. He knows very good cooking. Anyway, the next day, I did get a little bit of compensation. June 15th, Prabhupada in the evening was settling into his room and he asked for Palika. So sometimes in the evenings he would ask his cook to, you know, make some kind of a snack, a kachuri or a paratha or some other similar thing. That would give him a little energy for the, you know, rest of the night when he was up translating his books. So I thought, you know, he's calling in Palika, he's going to ask her to make something. So I was very happy when he asked her to make chira the same way that I cook it. Although I have failed as a cook, Prabhupada does occasionally ask me to make chira, usually in the evenings. He likes it, and so I'm not a total loss. So he actually told Palika, now you make it just like he makes it. It's very good. So I was very happy that one of the top cooks was, you know, told to take some advice from me. Something else that I cooked, I mentioned that when we left Bombay, just before We left Prabhupada, had me gather up some neem leaves and put them on the roof for drying. And then after a few days, I took all the dried neem leaves, I smashed them up into a powder, and so I had this bag of dried neem leaf powder with me. So that was April, and now it was August. Yeah, we were in New Mayapur in France. And August 4th, Prabhupada was just recovering at that time from quite a serious illness, heavy flu that he got on the flight over from New York to London, and he had been in bed for several days. He was really sick. When we first arrived in London, he told Hari Kesh, who met us in London and became Prabhupada's secretary at that time, he told him that now I want to go straight back to Bombay, because the climate is more suitable. But Air India being what it was, there were no bookings for another couple of months, so it was very difficult to change the flights. In the meantime, Bhagavan, who was the GBC for France, he heard that Prabhupada may not come, so he immediately flew to London to persuade Srila Prabhupada that actually the weather in France is much better than England, it's much warmer. And during that summer in Europe, they were having a big drought. So everything was it was hot and sunny and dry. So somehow or another, Prabhupada agreed that he would continue with the schedule and go to France. So we arrived there in late July, and we were out at New Mayapur, which was about 200 acres of land there, beautiful place and a big chateau. So instead of going out for a morning walk, Prabhupada adjusted his schedule. He was taking a little extra rest in the mornings, and he would go out in the afternoons and walk around the property. So that became, you know, the routine for whilst we were in France. We'd have these nice morning, nice afternoon walks, and in the mornings Prabhupada would take this extra rest. So this is August the 4th. After rising quite late at 7:30 a.m., Prabhupada called me in and told me to make him some vada, asking if I still had the dried neem leaf powder that he had me make before we left Bombay in April. He had not requested it until now, and I was glad that I still had it in my suitcase. I had actually, after a couple of months, I found it in my suitcase, and I was thinking, well, Prabhupada's not going to use this, he's never asked for it, and I was tempted to just throw it out. Then I thought, no, better not, wait till we get back to India. And sure enough, Prabhupada did ask for it when we got to France. So Prabhupada told me to mix 3 parts dal paste with 1 part neem and make it into small patties. So the mix was dark green, and it made him think that there was too much neem. He ate some, but he complained that it was too bitter. So he called me and he said, actually, I think we used too much neem, use less. But later on, he called me back into his room again. He smiled and he said, actually, it had done some good. So, you know, a lot of neem, it was, you know, bitter to eat, but it actually had a good effect on his digestion. So he requested a repeat of the same formula for tomorrow morning, except that instead of deep fried balls, he wants small patties, lightly fried on each side in a shallow pan. So we did that for a few mornings in France, and it actually helped Prabhupada improve his digestion. So neem, of course, they say if you eat 2 neem leaves a day, you'll never get sick. So it's Ayurvedic, and later on, a few days later, we flew to Tehran. So Prabhupada stayed there for a week. In those days, Iran was still accessible to Westerners with no problems. Americans were welcome, seeing as how the CIA had reinstalled the Shah of Iran at one point after he got deposed. So he owed a few, things to them. So anyway, it was good for us because a few of our devotees were there. We had Atreya Rishi. He was the GBC in the Middle East. He was actually from Iran, but I think he was a Zoroastrian or something like that before he became a devotee. He wasn't a Muslim, but he was Iranian. And he was working for a big company, Andersons, I think. They were at that time a very big accountancy company. So he persuaded them to let him open a branch of their company in Iran. So they paid all of his expenses, and he opened up the business there for them in Iran. So that he was working like that. And along with him was Navi Yovana and his wife. Navi Yovana and Atreya had been sharing the same flat before they joined the movement in New York. So they were old friends. So he went there. And during the Gaur Purnima festival in 76, Dayananda and Nandarani had been in Mayapur. Very briefly, Prabhupada had had Dayananda as his secretary, and then Pushtakrishna Swami turned up. So he was made the full-time secretary, and Dayananda and Nandarani were sent to Iran to assist Atreya Rishi. So there was three householder couples. There was one brahmachari, Ganagamya, and there was one sannyasi, Padibrajakacharya Swami. So Padibrajakacharya, he was doing some amazing preaching. He had been a Hatha Yoga teacher before he joined the movement. He was a very young man, but somehow or another he knew Hatha Yoga. So when he went to Iran, because we couldn't preach openly, I mean, even though Americans and Westerners were welcome, that's not to say that, you know, you could go up and down the street chanting Hare Krishna. It was still very restrictive. But he started preaching through this vehicle of Hatha Yoga. So he had some kind of a Hatha Yoga studio. Some young man came. He was just getting himself off of drug dependency. It turned out this boy was a relative of the Shah of Iran. He told other relatives, and then news got to the niece of the Shah of Iran that this man is a very good yoga teacher. So she took up yoga, but of course she was, you know, a part of the inner circle of the Shah's, the royal family. She wasn't going to go down to the studio. So he had to go to the palace several times a week, and he was, you know, the first Westerner ever to enter into the inner chambers of the Shah of Iran's palace. Not that that counts for much nowadays, but at that time it was a very, very big thing. She became so favorable, actually, that in 1977, the niece went with a whole entourage to America on a tour. And they went to Los Angeles, and they specifically put a day aside for visiting our Los Angeles temple. Now you have to remember, these people were all Muslims. But they came to the temple, they saw the deities, they went through, they just opened the first American theistic exhibition, Fate, which was a diorama display based on the Bhagavad Gita, and they loved everything. And they actually were gifted an original, I think one or two original BBT paintings. One of them was the painting of Krishna, baby Krishna with the pot of yogurt, you know, spilled over next to him. And I think the other one was, there's one where Mother Jasoda's got a stick in her hand, she's looking to the side, and on the other side of the wall, Krishna and Balaram are stealing yogurt. I think that's that one also. So those were given to the Shah's niece, and we were told that they had them hanging in the palace of the Shah of Iran. So anyway, amazing stuff was going on there. And Padibrajakacharya, you know, he was the main thing there. Prabhupada later on told him that he was a great yogi. So August the 9th then, we were in Prabhupada's room. Of course, not many people were coming. There were a few Indians that were coming in the evenings, expats that were living in Iran at that time. There were a few Iranians that were coming that the devotees had been preaching to. So there were some nice darshans, but the rest of the day everything was very quiet. So in the afternoon, myself and Padibraja Kacharya, we were in Prabhupada's room. He was chit-chatting about various things. So as he relaxed on his asana, his thoughts returned to his breakfast. He had taken some more of the neem butter that I had made for him in France. And he asked if Padibraja Kacharya and Pradyumna had tried it. "Did you like it?" he asked them. Padibraja Kacharya said that it tasted very healthy. Prabhupada was puzzled. "Healthy?" Padibraja Kacharya smiled. "Healthy. It tasted like it was good for me." So I interpreted it for him. I said, "That means that it didn't taste very nice, but we accepted that it was good." Padibraja Kacharya laughed. "I know by my intelligence that it was good to keep on eating, even though my tongue was saying stop." So when I had first joined Srila Prabhupada's party in Delhi last year, I was given some of Srila Prabhupada's remnants, which included some Kerala or bitter melon. I could hardly eat it because I had no conception that something bitter could be pleasant. At that time, Prabhupada had laughed, and he told me that it was an acquired taste and that we Westerners had no idea of proper food. Of course, in Bengal, you start with the bitters. That's the opposite of Gujarat, where you start with the sweets. Right? But in Bengal, you have bitter melon or neem bagun or like that, something. And then you go into the other stuff. So Prabhupada, you know, he had developed a taste for it. But when I ate his remnants, it was bitter melon. It was horrible. At least, you know, superficially anyway. But later on, I actually developed a taste for it. And now I love bitter things. But anyway, that's another thing. So Prabhupada said, "No," he said, "this neem is good. They say that if you eat at least 2 leaves of neem daily, you will never lose your appetite. Your appetite will be continuing. So although I've become accustomed to and have even gotten to like Kerala, and the neem is still a bit hard to take." I laughed. "Who can eat 2 leaves of neem?" "No, if you practice," Prabhupada smiled, "it is not impossible." Okay. So that was my attempts to cook. Another cook, as I mentioned before, going back to Harikesh, he was quite expert. He was cooking every day for Srila Prabhupada when I joined the party. So for the first couple of months, he was the cook. Then he took sannyas in early February, and he was sent off to, ostensibly to America. Somehow or another, by Krishna's arrangement, he ended up in Eastern Europe, and more or less started the Eastern European preaching program. Some things were going on already. Kirti Raj was already corresponding with people from Poland. His name is Jakubko. It's a Polish name. So he had some connections there, and he was corresponding and sending books and things like that. Some devotees had also occasionally gone into Russia. We had that one devotee, Anantashanti, who was initiated by Prabhupada after 3 days in Moscow. And little bits and pieces were going on, but Harikesh, he happened to... as he was transiting through London, he got invited by another devotee to visit a yoga group in Hungary. And when they went there, it was sensational. There'll probably be something about that soon. So Prabhupada then agreed to let him stay in Europe, and he began, you know, to develop the Eastern European preaching program. Because in those days, the Berlin Wall was still up. The Soviet Union was still very powerful. There was a huge Cold War, as they called it, going on. And if anybody got caught, you know, preaching religion, then, you know, you could be locked away for many, many years. So it was very dangerous. Anyway, he was doing that. But then in July in America. Pushta Krishna started having problems. He was Prabhupada's secretary. He wanted to leave the party and go out preaching. So Prabhupada agreed, and then it was decided that when we landed in London, Hari Kesh should be there to meet us, and that he would then become the secretary. So again, the question of who was going to cook came up, because Palika, as I say, said was added on the beginning of June in Los Angeles. She stayed with the party in America, but when we flew to London, then she was dropped off the party. So then we figured that since Hari Kesh had cooked before, he could do the cooking again. So he was not very happy about that. Being the secretary, he had a lot of service to do, and to have to take a break and spend an hour and a half cooking every day was a bit problematic for him. But he agreed. Of course, when we first landed, because Prabhupada was very sick, there wasn't much to cook. He was hardly eating anything. So he didn't really get into the cooking mode until we reached France. So July 28th, 1976, we had arrived in Paris. So due to the change in the time zone, it was already 12:20 p.m. by the time that we got settled in. That was at Fort Rue Lesueur, in the center of Paris there. I quickly set up Prabhupada's dictaphone and the other desk paraphernalia, and then got ready to give Prabhupada his massage. Hari Kesh and Bhagavan had made arrangements for someone else to cook Prabhupada's lunch. Bhagavan mentioned several ladies who could be possible cooks. Deciding on Parijata Dasi, that was Hari Vilas's wife, who has cooked for him before, Prabhupada said, "All right, she cooks nice." So he told them to make his regular standard fare, not cumbrous, as he put it. Rice, which he stipulated must be well cooked, vegetables, bitter melon, and two or three chapatis. He also asked for dal, which he said could be of any variety as long as it boiled nicely. Without being boiled, he said, it is useless. So she cooked for a few days. And then on the 30th, we went out to New Mayapur, which was, I guess, about a three-hour drive from Paris. So Prabhupada is still weak, and after a very short morning walk, he returned to his quarters without entering the temple room. He is still full of mucus and alters his diet frequently to speed his recovery. He told me that traditional Indian cooking is such that by proper combination of spices and a diet, one can cure almost any disease and still enjoy palatable dishes. So Prabhupada frequently did that. He would call in the cooks in the morning. He would discuss with them a particular kind of masala that he wanted them to make, different combinations. He liked to have everything made from, not powdered, but from the roots of whatever spices there were. They would soak them, and then Prabhupada would discuss the proportions, and they would make his meals with those kinds of masalas. And that was a curative as well as an appetizer. So anyway, we left Paris, and so Hari Kesh then had to take up the cooking. So Hari Kesh Maharaj is cooking, but he has not done much of it since leaving Prabhupada's party in February. Unfortunately, he's a little out of practice, and thus far he has not quite found the right formula to please his divine grace. In fact, Prabhupada is complaining, especially over what he offered him today. Instead of making the usual wet subji from peas, tomatoes and fried paneer, or freshly made cheese cubes, Hari Kesh decided to cook the paneer cubes in a thick sugar solution and make a sweet from it. When I took the plate into Prabhupada's room from the small kitchen next door, Prabhupada looked dubiously at the preparation, and he said, "What is this? Call him immediately." Hari Kesh came in a little sheepishly, and Prabhupada roundly criticized him for what he called his mental speculation. So he just decided he was going to do that, because he did it, But he didn't ask Srila Prabhupada, and Prabhupada didn't want it. He wanted his regular meal. So a couple of days later, August the 2nd, 1976, in New Mayapur, Hari Kesh, who still hasn't managed to get Prabhupada's cooking quite right, asked how he found today's lunch. Prabhupada's comments amazed me with his attention to detail. The potatoes and the karela should be fried, he said. Hari Kesh said, yes, it was fried. I fried it with the cover on. No, no, not in the beginning, he said. Fry it, and if it is still hard, then... Oh, then you put the cover on. Oh, okay. Yes, but not from the beginning. Oh, I made a mistake, Hari Kesh understood. If you cover it from the beginning, Prabhupada said, the water which is already there will be coming out. And the idea is that the water should be taken away. Then it will be tasteful. Still, it was good. So Prabhupada, just from tasting it, he knew how he had cooked it. You know, some method, you know, put the cover on at the beginning, you know. Prabhupada was expert. Anyway, so that was in France. And then August the 2nd, 7th, that was the day that we left Paris and we flew to Iran. So we had driven on the 6th. Prabhupada had installed Krishna and Balaram in New Mayapur. That was the big event. He initiated a lot of devotees. And then we left immediately back for Paris. And then the following day, Prabhupada was leaving for Iran. So we had to be at the airport by midday, and the morning was hectic. Prabhupada had his massage at 8:30 a.m. So sometimes when we were traveling, of course, you know, when he was due for his regular massage, we might be flying or something. So we sometimes had to adjust that schedule. I remember when we left Bombay to begin the tour, we had a flight at 7 o'clock in the morning, or we had to leave by 7 in the morning, and we were flying all day and all night to get to Melbourne. And so Prabhupada had his massage at 3:30 in the morning. So again, same thing. He had his massage at 8:30 a.m. and he had his prasadam at 10 a.m. Right after this, he had to visit the local post office to sign for a registered letter that had been sent to him from England. The postal authorities had refused to give it to the devotees, insisting that he had to collect it himself. That done, we proceeded on, escorted by just a small party of local devotees, and finally we boarded the Iran Air flight for a 1:15 p.m. departure and a 4 hours 45 minutes flight to Iran. As soon as we settled into our seats, now Prabhupada used to travel first class, so whatever the ticketing, you know, Prabhupada and his servant would fly first class, and then the secretary and any other devotees, they would fly in economy. So that was one nice thing about traveling with Prabhupada. I got to travel first class all around the world. Of course, it was first class just being with Prabhupada. It didn't really make any difference about the seats. But anyway, so we settled in to our seats at the front of the aircraft. Hari Kesh went down the back. And as soon as we settled in, Prabhupada turned to me. He caustically complained about Hari Kesh's cooking and the erratic nature of his offerings. After several minutes expressing his dissatisfaction, he concluded, "He is cooking 90% for himself. He is not cooking to my desire." So he just left it at that. He didn't say, you know, find somebody else, or you do it, or, you know. Of course, he wasn't going to say you do it anyway. It would have been even worse. But he just, you know, left it there. And then I was thinking, you know, the fact that Prabhupada brought it up means it's serious. So I have to do something. Now, what shall I do? So I was trying to think. I had to think what to do. Prabhupada was making it clear that he wanted some change, although he didn't say it directly. Hari Kesh was doing his best, but somehow Srila Prabhupada wasn't satisfied. I mentally resolved that as soon as we got to Tehran, I would contact Los Angeles and insist that Palika Dasi be sent to join us in Bombay to resume her service as cook. I figured that that would ensure that Prabhupada would have a good and steady standard of cooking. It is absolutely essential for his health. The only other alternative would be for his personal servant to do the service, but I am already a proven failure. And even apart from this, when Prabhupada has his servant do both the cooking and the massage, neither service can be rendered as efficiently as when each one is performed by a separate devotee. So there was some advantage to that. If the servant was the cook, then you had to stop halfway through the massage, go and put the cooker on, then you had to run around at the end of the massage, you know, and prepare everything. So somehow or another, both things got a little bit interrupted. But if it was done by separate people, then I could give Prabhupada an hour and a half massage, you know, with no problem, and really get into it. And at the same time, the cooking also could be done even more elaborately, as Sukadev, you know, he was cooking with six pots as well as the three-tier cooker. So there was that advantage. So Palika's cooking of first-rate prasadam, made just according to Prabhupada's wishes, enabled me to give him a long and attentive massage. So I felt a return to this standard is best. His Divine Grace's health is gradually deteriorated, and I want to assure him of at least a good diet to help forestall any major health problems. So then the next day then, 1976, August the 8th in Tehran, one of the first things that I did on our arrival was to ask Atreya Rishi to telex Los Angeles from his office with a request for Palika Dasi to rejoin our party in India next week. For those of you that don't know what a telex is, it was the forerunner to the faxes and internet. The telex was a machine you could type stuff in and it would instantaneously send it out to wherever the destination was. And the person at the destination would get a ticker tape kind of thing, a strip, with the message coming out one character at a time. Yeah. So Atreya had a telex. By the way, Prabhupada was once asked, can we install telexes in every temple? And Prabhupada said no. He said, it is not necessary. It will simply increase the prajalpa. I don't know what he would say about the internet now and, you know, everything else we have, but anyway. So after Prabhupada's complaints on the aeroplane leaving France, I can see no alternative. Harikesh Maharaj has conceded that his cooking is not satisfying his divine grace. And while we are here in Tehran, Nandarani will do it. So Nandarani had cooked for Prabhupada in February and previous times, and she was another lady that had learnt how to cook according to Prabhupada's satisfaction. So she was happy to take it up whilst we were in Tehran, and Harikesh was happy because he didn't have to bother with it anymore. So I didn't tell anybody that I had asked for Palika to be sent to Bombay, because I knew that if I told Srila Prabhupada, he would say, no, it doesn't matter, it's not that important, don't spend that kind of money. So I didn't tell him. So it was a bit of a risk, gambling. So anyway, we're there a week. We flew to Bombay on the 13th of August, and we arrived late in the evening. So after coming through the customs, then we arrived at the temple, and there was a small crowd of devotees at the entrance to his apartment building to greet him, including Palika. So she'd arrived, and she was there in Bombay waiting for us. So Srila Prabhupada was happy but surprised to see her. Oh, you are here. So she was surprised that he was surprised. Telling him that, I've come here to cook for you. So they both then looked at me inquisitively, because she thought that Srila Prabhupada had personally called her to India, and he looked at me because he had not been informed that she was going to rejoin the party. Thinking Prabhupada might not agree to have money spent for his personal needs, I had taken a gamble that he would approve. Now, with some trepidation, I explained my actions in sending for her, motivated by my desire that he get good prasadam every day. Then I waited for his response. Anyway, now there'll be no difficulty, he said, with a gentle smile, filling me with relief. So, it was good. Prabhupada accepted it. It was an initiative that I took. It was a bit of a risk, but it turned out okay. So from that time on, then Palika was on the party up until March of 77. She had kinds of some comings and goings for various reasons, but generally speaking, she was doing most of the cooking, and Prabhupada was happy with that. So after the reception in Prabhupada's room, Prabhupada tipped his head, signaling the end of his reception. The devotees dispersed, and Harikesh Maharaj and I went about unpacking and setting up his desk paraphernalia. After everybody left, Prabhupada took a little prasadam from Palika. Inspecting his plate, he asked her about one of the preparations. Palika told him that it was a sweet that had been made by one of the girls here. Not everybody should make, Prabhupada told her. She is initiated. Palika confirmed that the girl was, but assured him that she would be making all of his prasadam herself. She had had no time today because she had also only just arrived. Again, that, you know, Prabhupada had this uncanny knack of picking out things that, you know, were a little different or not done right. So again, he saw this one sweet. Who's made this? Immediately he wanted to. He knew somebody not regular. Yeah. So Palika was there. And then later on in the year, she was joined by Shruti Rupadasi. She had cooked on occasions for Srila Prabhupada. When I was the temple commander at Krishna Balaram Mandir in 1975, Shruti Rupa had come for some time and she was helping cook. There was another lady, Kishori, from France that used to cook, and Shruti Rupa was cooking also. So again, in 76, she kind of came onto the party briefly. And actually what had happened, I think Palika had gotten some kind of eczema on her hands, so she couldn't cook for some time until she got that cured. In the meantime, we had gone down to Hyderabad. So whilst we were in Hyderabad, Prajumna's wife Arundhati, she began cooking. Arundhati wasn't that good of a cook. The other ladies were expert, but she was okay, but not that expert. Whilst we were in on the farm there, Tejas Prabhu, he was actually a good cook. So he had also been doing some cooking. So between the two of them, they were cooking. Then from Hyderabad, we travelled north to Wardha. Wardha is like in the middle of the country, and there was this Gita Pratishthan meeting. So there to greet Srila Prabhupada, one of the devotees was Shruti Rupa. So this was December the 20th, 1976 in Wardha. When we first arrived, Prabhupada told Shruti Rupa that he would accept the hospitality of his hosts and allow them to provide his meals. She could simply confer with them and advise them on what to cook. However, he's not been so pleased with their provision, and each meal he has asked her to add something extra. So today she made practically everything. For his breakfast, she provided mung wada with coconut chutney, fresh chana, ginger and lime, sliced oranges, peeled masambi, apple, banana, papaya, fresh sandesh with kisha, lychee, chiku and pomegranate, poa, which is a flat rice dish, and finished off with the carrot halva. So that was breakfast. Prabhupada was satisfied with her efforts. He ate all the poha and he told her, "Everything is nice, freshly prepared. You have learned very nicely. Now you keep on." So for his lunch, he asked her to prepare sukta, Sorry, just missed my place there. All right. For his lunch, he asked her to prepare shukta, a kind of stew made primarily with bitter melon and shak, or spinach. He also reminded her that since his stay in Vrindavan, he has been taking a mixture of dals, tor, chana, and urd and mung. So accordingly, at 1 p.m, he had rice, muli, shukta, mixed dal, and all prepared in the three-tier cooker, and then a variety of subjis, okra, potato strings, a wet cauliflower potato preparation, and bindi. So he liked everything, and he told her, please keep on making this way. But the preparation that he especially liked was pea kachuris. Again, kachuris. He told her at least four times, sitting on his seat, standing up, entering the bathroom, and again when he came out, the kachuris were first class. If you want to please Prabhupada, just make him kachuris, but good ones. She also had made some eggplant, which she cooked on a cast iron wok. Before trying it, he picked it up, and his hand went black, and he said with a little disappointment, oh, it is not done properly. But then he ate it, and he rang the bell, and when she answered, he told her, actually, no, this is prepared very nicely, and he ate the whole thing. So there's a way of cooking eggplant, especially I've seen in Bengal, the whole thing is cooked, and it's kind of roasted on a cast iron wok. So it often it gets like a little sooty or black, and you put a little ghee. But Prabhupada really liked that, and she learnt how to do that very nicely. So that's Shruti Rupa. She did cook later on and off. She actually kept a diary of when she was cooking with Srila Prabhupada. She had some journals, and that's where I got all of this detailed information from. It's not that I was writing down everything that she was cooking it, but she did. And whatever instructions Prabhupada gave to her, she would immediately write that down, and then she would, you know, execute his instructions. So she was a good cook. I've been trying to get her to publish her cooking journals for years, but somehow or another she hasn't agreed yet. But she did agree at least to give me this information. Okay, so then some other people that cooked for Srila Prabhupada in Mayapur, of course back in Bengal, Prabhupada's homeland, so to speak. So February the 16th, 1977. At that time Prabhupada was, you know, very, very weak. His health was deteriorating rather rapidly. In fact, when we arrived in Mayapur one morning after breakfast, I was standing with him on the balcony of the Lotus building, and Prabhupada kind of half turned and he said, never in my life have I felt as weak as I do now. So, you know, that was the general state of his health. Something was, you know, happening there. And so we were a little cautious. So anyway, February the 16th, after Prabhupada's massage and bath, the devotees here brought a large circular wooden board with about 30 different preparations for Prabhupada's lunch. It has been done by the ladies in the kitchen. Prabhupada was delighted, and he ate more than what he has for a long time, sampling as many preparations as he could. He was so pleased that he asked for all the ladies to be brought in so that he could personally thank them. So this was all the Bengali ladies. By this time, a number of Bengali families were moving on to our ISKCON property, and so all the ladies were being engaged in cooking. When he came down at 5 p.m, the ladies all came into his room, and he praised them very much for their efforts. Due to their village training, they very shyly hung their heads and remained at a distance from Srila Prabhupada near the door. And he praised them that this is the real Vedic understanding. He said, this is bhakti. What is the use of reading Vedanta if one does not develop attraction for Krishna? Nice flowers, nice prasadam, nice chanting. This is Vaikuntha. So he was talking in general about Mayapur, that he was seeing now this community developing. He was very happy. When we first arrived, there was a big field full of flowers. So Prabhupada told Bhavananda, who was one of the, he was co-director at that time with Jayapataka Maharaj, he said, "This is your first success, just seeing all these flowers growing." And I remember one morning, he was looking over the railing of the balcony. One of the ladies was in the park, and she had a basket. She was collecting flowers. So he was looking very happily. And he said, "Just see," he said, "with every flower picked, she gets a little closer to going back to Godhead." So this was his idea. Nice prasadam, nice flowers, nice chanting. This is Vaikuntha. Okay, so that's a few of the different kinds of different cooks. That's not to say everybody. As I said, Arundhati was also cooking for Srila Prabhupada. Okay, so now we'll look at another aspect of cooking, which I touched upon before, and that is cooking for health. Yeah, Prabhupada mentioned about, you know, the spicing and the particular combinations of foods. And in Ayurveda, of course, anybody that knows anything about Ayurveda knows that, you know, what you eat is extremely important for your health. You've got the three doshas in the body, and those are affected directly by the types of food that we eat. Yeah. Of course, in Western medicine, allopathic, you go with some disease, they never ask you, "What do you eat?" Never. Right? They look, they see the symptom, "Oh yeah, maybe this disease, maybe that disease, take this pill, you know, take this liquid." They never ask you what you're eating, as if it doesn't count. But in Ayurveda, of course, they know very well it's one of the most important things about health is what you eat. You are what you eat. So February the 8th, 1976, Prabhupada was in Mayapur. Because his digestion is poor and he is suffering from excess mucus, Prabhupada has been adjusting his diet. His liver is not functioning properly and his digestion is not good. He has stopped taking evening prasadam. For breakfast he is eating only fruits, and for lunch he has a variety of vegetable preparations but no dal or rice. Today he decided to take his evening milk in the form of milk sweets like rasgulla or sandesh made with gur, a local form of brown sugar made from boiled down cane juice. He reasoned that the sugar would be good for his liver and the solid milk would give him strength to work on his books throughout the night. So as a liquid, milk is difficult for him to digest because it was causing too much mucus. But to take it in solid form, he could eat that and he would get strength from it. So he called in his new cook, Nandarani, and he explained how to make the rasgullas. He said that the curd has to be kneaded very thoroughly. Then when rolled, a small piece of rock candy can be placed in the middle. Then the whole thing has to be cooked until it is sticky. So we were giving him rasgullas in the evening, and Prabhupada was eating like half a rasgulla, and then he was saying that's enough. I was surprised that, you know, just by heating half a rasgulla, he would felt that that gave him some strength and energy to be able to do his translation work in the night. I mean, you know, for a young man, a half a rasgulla is, you know, you're just getting started. You know, you need five or six before it really, you know, seems to make a difference. But with Prabhupada, half a rasgulla was enough. There was actually a little incident there when I was giving him his rasgullas, and there was some sugar juice that was on his table. This is off the point, but it's still interesting. So I came in afterwards, you know, to clear away, and by that time some ants had come. In India, you leave some food out for a few minutes, immediately the ants will come. So, you know, all these little ants are there running around on his desktop, and they're all, you know, binging out on this sugar solution that's on the tabletop. So I came to clean away, and I was, you know, going to wipe them up, and then I thought, no, I can't kill them. So I was blowing them and tapping on the table, making them scatter. And Prabhupada was sitting there watching. And then he smiled after about a minute and he said, "Formerly you would have killed them." And I blushed because it was a fact. When I was a kid, sometimes, you know, we would pour boiling water down the ants' holes, yeah, to just flush them out and things like that. Of course, nowadays everybody has their can of poison, which they spray to keep out the bugs and the ants and everything else. So anyway, Prabhupada was happy that I wasn't killing the ants. So August the 15th, 1976, back in Bombay after the world tour. Prabhupada is attempting to treat his disease by adjusting the spicing in his diet. In the morning, he instructed Palika to salt black pepper and cumin seed and then grind them into a paste. He had to do the same with turmeric. She cooked his lunch using this spicing, carefully mixing the paste with the required amount of water and adding it to his lunch preparations. Then this evening, he called her in and he had to make two parathas and a potato and eggplant sabji. So that was a lot, and especially for the evening, for Prabhupada to eat more or less a full meal again. So we were delighted to see him eat, and he told us that the spicing had given him a good appetite. So what she'd done at lunch, then that prepped him up, and then he felt like he wanted to eat. Very important for health. If you have no appetite, you cannot eat. Then the food becomes poison if you have no appetite. If you have an appetite, then it means the juices are flowing and you can digest it and it will actually give you some health and some strength. But if you have no appetite and still you try to eat, then you don't get the proper benefit from it and it actually can cause more problems. So along with the flower garland and fresh sandalwood paste, that I have also been offering Srila Prabhupada watermelon every afternoon after his post-lunch nap. The melons are so large that I only use a portion and I save the rest in the refrigerator for later on. Srila Prabhupada happened to come past when I had the fridge door open. He saw the half a watermelon in the fridge and he stopped and said, "Cut fruit must be distributed immediately." He didn't like it that we were keeping a piece of fruit in the fridge after it had already been cut, because he used to complain that was our malecha tendency. Everything in the mode of ignorance. Yeah. Actually, there's I think it's a recording I have of Sally Agarwal. Yeah, a few years back, she had gone to New Brindavan. There was some anniversary. So her and her husband Gopal, they had gone to New Brindavan and they, you know, talked about Srila Prabhupada's visit to Butler, Pennsylvania, and his stay with them right at the beginning when he arrived in 65. So she particularly mentioned that how Srila Prabhupada, because it was his first time in the West, and there were so many things he'd never seen before, and one of the things that he hadn't seen before was frozen food. So she said that he took delight, you know, in taking out frozen vegetables from the freezer. That he thought, you know, that it was a very wonderful thing. Now you could get any kind of vegetable any time of the year. So that was her observation. Of course, that was only the first observation. Prabhupada told me about that. He said, yes, he said when I first saw frozen food, I thought, oh, it's very nice. You can get, you know, different vegetables any time. He said, but then later on, he said, when I saw, you know, afterwards, actually, although it's frozen, he said, it is all rotten. As soon as you defrost it, it's immediately rotten. That means it's already rotten. It's not preserved at all. It's just frozen, but not preserved. Cut fruit must be distributed immediately. The idea is that fresh fruit, fresh vegetables, everything has to be fresh. Then it actually gives some health and strength. Although you can preserve things by drying them in the sun. That's another way of doing it. And you can preserve vegetables that way. I think that may come up later on. Okay, so we're talking about health and eating for health. December 27th, 1976, Prabhupada was in Bombay. He was quite ill, very weak, and so we actually called a couple of different doctors to come and see Srila Prabhupada. So one man came in the mid-morning, Mr. Chakravarti. He was an Ayurvedic Kaviraj. And after speaking with Srila Prabhupada, we set off by car to the man's house and then to his clinic. It was a long drive to the other side of Bombay. I was surprised. I mean, normally, when Prabhupada was sick, the doctors would come, they would give some medicine, and then, you know, he would go through the whole thing, discuss with them, they would prescribe, we would get the medicine, and then Prabhupada wouldn't take it. He would just say, you know, Harinam is the best medicine, and that was it. So he wouldn't generally he wouldn't take medicines. Although with Ayurvedic medicine, he did sometimes take that, but allopathic medicine he really didn't like. So I was surprised. This man came, they talked, and then Prabhupada said, all right, let's go. And we actually went with this man all the other way, the other side of Bombay. It took about an hour or so. So Prabhupada was actually, you know, going with him to his clinic, which was really unusual. So the man's house was a very small flat in a block of flats with tiny cramped rooms. I remember going in there and practically speaking, if you stretched your arms out, you could touch from one side of the rooms to the other. I mean, they were tiny little places. And Prabhupada commented that they had paid thousands of rupees for this horrible small place. So from his house we went to the clinic, which turned out to be his father's house, which was again a very small house. As we walked in, I noticed a dog was sleeping under the bed. Prabhupada was offered a seat, and after some time, the father and son consulted and prescribed various medicines and certain fruits. And a diet for Prabhupada to take. The diet consisted of simply boiled rice and certain fruits, dahlia, as that's cracked wheat, as well as a quarter of a liter of milk three times a day, plus four types of pills to be taken twice a day. It's a little complex. From there we visited an Ayurvedic pharmacy belonging to the father, who is very old, to get the medicine. And then we returned to the temple. So the whole thing took 2 or 3 hours. I was really surprised that Prabhupada went to so much trouble and time, you know, to do all of this. But anyway, we got all this medicine, all these four different kinds of pills. As soon as Prabhupada sat down, I asked him if he would actually follow the diet. So despite the fact that he'd taken so much time and trouble, I was still doubtful, you know, based on what I knew from previous events, whether Prabhupada would actually follow the diet or not. So, you know, they were prescribing just boiled rice, no salt, and just a couple of fruits. So Prabhupada shook his head and he laughed. I eat what I like. Even as a boy, I would only eat what I like, nothing else. You can offer me thousands of preparations, but I'll only eat what I like. He took the pills once and then he abandoned them. So I was a bit concerned, you know, this was the 27th. So by December the 30th, I was thinking maybe I should try to just gently encourage Prabhupada, you know, to try the diet and the pills. So December the 30th, this evening, one Dr. Shiv Sharma, so this is another Kaviraj, came. He is actually an impressive man. Although late in years, about 73 or 74, he has a very sharp and attentive mind and he knows his business. He has lectured in various countries about Ayurvedic medicines and he has come to see if he can help Srila Prabhupada. He was shown the results of the blood tests which had arrived this morning. That was a whole other episode. The blood tests. Dr. Patel, who was this gentleman that used, retired doctor that used to walk with Prabhupada in Bombay, very kind of pushy little guy, very boisterous and full of himself, but Prabhupada liked him. So he saw Prabhupada, you know, didn't come out a few days for the morning walk, and so he got Prabhupada to agree to have his friend, who was a practicing doctor, come and, you know, inspect him. So what they did was, they knew that we wouldn't, you know, we didn't like the fact that a doctor was coming to take blood tests. So Dr. Patel, he brought his friend, and he snuck in to Prabhupada's quarters. They got into Prabhupada's sitting room. I didn't see them come in, and so I couldn't get in there myself. And as soon as they got inside, he shut the door and bolted it from the inside so that we couldn't get in. And then, you know, Prabhupada was there with the two of them. So then he just felt obliged, you know, that they wanted to take his blood for testing. So he gave them some samples. I mean, you know, Prabhupada always said that he never wanted to go to a hospital, and he especially didn't like having needles stuck in him. But anyway, they took their blood test, and Prabhupada told me afterwards, he said, I didn't really want to do it, but I just took it, all right, well, it's Krishna's arrangement, you know, that they've come, so let them have their blood. So now, on the 30th, we just got the test back. That was Shanta Shiv Sharma. And after doing his examination of Prabhupada, he told him that practically everything was all right, except that one kidney is badly diseased. That was Prabhupada's main problem. He had a diseased kidney. Several times on the tour in America and Hawaii, Prabhupada had called me in the middle of the night. Especially, I remember when we were at Gita Nagari. This was about July 14th or 13th. And Prabhupada was just sitting there, and he was really like ashen, very, very strained. He was just sitting there. It was about 1 or 2 in the morning, and he just said, I can't work. He said, my kidney is giving me too much problems. So again, you know, we felt helpless because I mean, we didn't know anything about medicine anyway, but apart from that, I knew very well that Prabhupada didn't like calling the doctors. But on that occasion, I had asked him, I said, well, can we call a doctor? So this was, you know, it had happened in Hawaii, the same thing. He called us in the middle of the night and said because his kidney was giving him too much trouble, then he wasn't going to go on the morning walk. And occasionally he would get this uremia where, you know, his hands and feet would swell up very badly. And then he would take a half of a diuretic pill, and that would cause him to pass all the excess fluid out. So it was an ongoing problem. When we were in Gita Nagari, the next day we went back to New York. We called this doctor, Dr. Bhagat, and he prescribed he diagnosed the same thing, diseased kidney, perhaps a kidney stone, and then he prescribed, I think, 4 or 5 different medicines, antibiotic, painkiller, sleeping pill, as if Prabhupada was going to take a sleeping pill. And so we bought the medicine. I put them on Prabhupada's desk. And then he immediately refused to take any of them. So anyway, again, now that was in July. Now it was December. Ongoing problems. So the doctor advised that he should not take any fat, ghee or salt. And he gave certain medicines and told Srila Prabhupada that he should rest completely for at least 2 weeks, not speak with anyone, and he should not now fly anymore. So flying was also a bit of a problem. Prabhupada has agreed to at least tentatively follow his recommendations. So then the next day, December the 31st, 1976, Prabhupada is attempting to follow the diet, but he is still taking ghee. After a lunch of boiled food, he complained that he cannot eat without salt or ghee. He said, eating boiled food is the same as starving. I tried to persuade him, but Srila Prabhupada, if you can just cut out the ghee, then you may get a little better. Otherwise, if you continue with it, your kidney will become very bad. Then I shall die. What is that? Better to die by eating. If I starve, then I'll also die. To set me before me a plate of boiled food is starving. I cannot eat it. So that was it. I knew that, alright, there's no chance anymore. Finished. He also complained that the medicine is taking away his appetite, so it looks like he'll continue in the way that he always has. And he did. Prabhupada doesn't appear to be really too much bothered by any sickness that he gets. He seems resigned to the fact that his body is very old and it's not going to last for very much longer, no matter what adjustments are made. So why should he be put to unnecessary discomfort just to prolong his bodily existence? So that was the mood that I picked up. Prabhupada knew when you're 80, there's no question of curing anything or restoring your health. It's just a question of, dragging out a little bit more time, that's all. And then inevitably, the time will come when it's all finished. Okay, so it's 10 to 9. I'm going to stop there at that point and we'll continue this evening.